Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and thanks for tuning in once again to Enterprise Radio here on EPN. If you're not already connected with us on our various social media outlets, we invite you to do so by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at ePodcast Network. Today, we're speaking with Mr. Gary Heil, an internationally acclaimed expert in the fields of leadership management and organizational culture. His work has helped some of the most prominent leaders and companies in the world, including former presidents of the United States, Fortune 10 companies, and professional sports coaches become more innovative and culturally vital. His book is called Choose Love, Not Fear, How the Best Leaders Build Cultures of Engagement and Innovation that Unleash Human Potential. And Mr. Heil, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks for the invitation, Eric.
And of course, it certainly is our pleasure, and thanks for your time. So for starters today, tell us, Mr. Heil, why did you choose the title Choose Love for a leadership book?
Interesting question. We had started out to do a study to figure out why leaders didn't walk their talk and why they talked so much better game than they played. And we interviewed about 700 leaders on a couple continents. And some of the things we found in the study were pretty predictable about culture. But one thing we didn't predict at all, there were a few leaders, not many, but a few, who had created outrageously good teams that were highly successful. And yet when you visited them, one thing jumped off the page. You were just in their midst, and what distinguished them right away was the leader and the team had a relationship that was fundamentally different than anything else we saw. The team related to each other in ways that just weren't normal. And about 25 years ago, a guy named Jan Carlson, who ran an airline called SAS, told me that the first decision every leader needs to make is to choose love or choose fear. And I thought I got it, but I didn't. And it took Dabo Swinney to continue to bark in my ear how he was going to win at Clemson University on the football team because they loved each other. And I was like, yeah, okay. And then I went out and interviewed a guy at De La Salle High School in California who had not lost a football game in 12 years. And all he wanted to talk about was how much he loved his players and how his players loved each other. And then I was interviewing the past CEO of Ford, a guy named Alan Mulally. And he was telling me that you can't coach him up until you love him up. And I kept hearing this over and over. And every time I saw a great team, I saw this absolute different level of relationship among players and workers, so much so that I thought I had no choice but to change the title to the book because they kept yelling at me. It was the fundamental difference in the relationships they had that was their competitive advantage.
Yeah, you mentioned as an example, the head coach of the Clemson Tigers football program, Dabo Swinney, a great example of that right there for sure. Now, you have suggested that we need the new theory or a new theory of motivation if we hope to be successful in the future. Get into some of those details per your perspective.
Well, you know, as the chairman of a couple public compensation committees, you know, I had this long line of compensation consultants who wanted to advise me that if I only found a way to bribe or incentivize the management team better, they would do a better job. And it just never made much sense with the research. And the research is pretty clear. The more you bribe me to do something, the less effective I become at it in general, except in the most routine of tasks. And, you know, when you ask people what motivates people, you know, most people give you this theory of manipulating rewards and punishments, which to me is better for training animals than it is for motivating, quote unquote, motivating people. The premise of most of the research, and I think my view, is that Douglas McGregor had it right 50 years ago when he said, how do you motivate people? You can't. The most you can do is create an environment where already motivated people are willing to come and make a huge contribution to what you're trying to do. I think that leaders are in the opportunity business. I think they give players an opportunity or workers an opportunity to do extraordinary things, so they attract motivated people to do really cool stuff. I think it's a lost game to think I can motivate somebody. I don't think I have that power. So I think we have to go from an antiquated, I can manipulate you into getting you to do something, to I provide an opportunity and you choose.
I like that feedback from you there. That is some good stuff. Thanks for that. Now, in your opinion, what are the things that separate the best leaders from the rest of the crowd?
Well, I think the first thing, as I said, is they build a culture based on positive emotion instead of fear. I really believe, Eric, that we're more hooked on using fear to control performance than we like to think. Whether it's grades in school, where I was talking to a person in upstate South Carolina not long ago, a professor, and I said to him, there's this research that shows, you know, if grades can be inhibiting to learning. He says, yeah, but if you didn't have grades, why would they even come to class? And I went, well, if it was interesting, probably they would come, right? But there's this idea that we can use this fear of loss, fear of not getting the compensation, fear of not getting a performance appraisal. This fear that we use to control performance is almost pervasive to the point that we don't even feel it or see it anymore. Even really nice leaders, empathetic leaders, people who are kind, use these management practices that evoke fear to get people to do what they want them to do. I think the first thing we can do is to stop using fear to control and rely more on positive emotion, as we said. And then I think we have to answer the basic question that every follower asks. Every time you say, follow me, I think every follower in the world asks two questions. Where are we going and why are we going there? And if what you're asking us to try to do is worthy of my sacrifice, I have a good chance of following you, especially if it's something that adds meaning to my life. I think as a beginning, there are lots of other things, but I think as a beginning, if we rely more on positive emotion and less on fear, and we give people a reason to sacrifice, I think a lot of people will come along. But unfortunately, most leaders don't have a really good, compelling thing they're trying to do that's worthy of my sacrifice. And most of the time, I'm reacting out of fear instead of a positive emotion to do great stuff.
Really awesome to touch on this topic and some good information so far today. We're joined by Mr. Gary Heil, an internationally acclaimed expert in the fields of leadership, management, and organizational culture. Again, his book is called Choose Love, Not Fear, How the Best Leaders Build Cultures of Engagement and Innovation that Unleash Human Potential. And he's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, Mr. Heil, some say that we're in an era where we have a leadership crisis. Do we really?
I think we definitely have one. If you look at the research that Gallup and others have done, only about a third or a little less than a third of the North American workforce is highly engaged in their work. And if you look at the relationship between engagement and profitability or engagement and productivity, only highly engaged people correlate with being more profitable. And that's why in the startups and stuff that we've all been a part of, they're far more engaged and therefore largely more effective and more productive than larger organizations. And when you're dealing with only a third of the workforce being highly engaged, and according to Gallup, almost one in five employees come to work every day working against the goals of the organization. And nearly 70% of the people don't trust their bosses. 52% of workers are looking for their next job actively. I think, you know, we don't get people's full potential in most organizations that they work in. And I think if there were nothing else, that would create a crisis.
And you are so right on that, and some really good points made to support your argument there. Now, you also argue in your book for greater diversity in order to facilitate innovation. Is that the missing cultural attribute that you think to creating an innovative culture?
I don't think it's the mythic one, but I think it's important. I think that, like the law of requisite variety, if I don't have enough variety inside the company, I can't innovate effectively to match the variety outside the company in terms of customers and shareholders. So I think we need more diversity in every sense, diversity of people, diversity of thought. But it doesn't do any good if that diversity goes unexpressed. So if I create a diverse workforce that's scared to death to speak their opinion because the culture is fearful, it doesn't really work very well. And I think that we have to understand about creativity and innovation is that there's a natural bias against innovation. My experience has been that people talk about innovation, but then punish innovative expression. Culture is a stabilizing mechanism that implicitly tells people to do more of what they did yesterday instead of what they need to do tomorrow. And so innovation is disruptive. Innovation is novelty. And most cultures don't reward novelty and risk and differences, and I'm not sure where to go. Innovation culture, unlike innovation, provides stability and predictability. So I think the biggest impediment to innovation is the present culture and the successes of the past as they've become part of the present culture.
Now, another question for you, and also in that regard, why aren't more cultures innovative?
Well, I think it's a natural problem, as we said. I mean, culture is itself stabilizing. Innovation is disruptive. So in order to have an innovative culture, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make it normal, part of the habits of the company, to become disruptive, to invite outside ideas in, to provide interesting information to flow through the veins of the company in ways that people can experiment and look at the world differently. And most organizations, when the culture starts to form, tend to do more of what they did yesterday and less of what they need to do tomorrow as a natural consequence. I think if we're going to create that innovative culture, leaders have to be overt and consistent in their willingness to create conflict inside a company. And I don't mean conflict like we're all going after each other forever, but I think so many times people think they can create an innovative culture with like a kumbaya kind of moment. Like we're going to create innovation and we're going to create change, but we're all going to get along, hold hands, and sing a song. And I think most innovations come from debate, conflict, different opinions, people pushing each other outside their comfort zone, and most people are trying to avoid that, not embrace that.
Certainly some things to think about and to make those adjustments accordingly. Thanks for your feedback there. Now, you say also that we should wear rose-colored glasses once in a while as leaders. Isn't it the leader's job to ensure that the organization faces reality?
Absolutely, Eric. You know that. I mean, somebody once said, a famous person said, the first job of a leader is to make sure the organization sees reality, and the last job is to say thank you. However, I think that it's not that simple. And I say rose-colored glasses because I'm a believer that we should do more reality checks and more information to see reality. But, you know, I had a golfer who was the best junior golfer on the planet for a while. And he likes to throw stones at a couple tour players that were his competitors and partners when he was playing professional golf. And he would say, they're not as good as they think they are. He says, but they think they're better than they are. And because they think they're better, because they believe they're better, they perform better. And that's why they're playing and he's retired. And there's something about a confidence that some people just believe they can do the near impossible. And they do. I mean, you talk about Dabo Swinney. I remember Dabo Swinney told me one day that in 2015, that he was going to make him print 15 tickets at Clemson in 2015. You know, the only way to print 15 tickets in college football is to get to the national championship game. And I said, Coach, you don't have a single returning player on the offensive or defensive line. Do you really think you can do that? And Dabo's thing was, oh, you have little faith. And I walked out that night going, I love Coach, but come on, 15 this year? He's going to get there, but 15 this year, and sure enough, 15 games later, he's in the national championship game, and I'm the fool that didn't think it was possible. People who just believe they can do things nobody else believes they can do are just annoying sometimes, but highly successful and accomplish more than the rest of us. And I think there's a time when we have to see reality, but also be the pragmatic optimist that sees the world differently than everybody else.
And another great mention of Dabo Swinney. He's a great coach and a great leader, and definitely supports you in your thoughts on that. Now, you have written that the biggest impediment to better leadership is the present organizational culture. How does culture inhibit leadership development as we conclude today?
So I think the way culture and leadership work together is interesting. 70% of a culture is created by the leaders' actions, the dialogues they create, and the stories they tell. They go a long way to creating the culture. However, once the culture is formed, there are certain norms and expectations. Culture becomes the way we do things here. And so the way we do things here include a certain way of leading, a certain expectation around leaders. And if you're going to act differently than that in that organization, it sometimes creates a reaction in the culture that tells you that you should do more of what people expect and not be quite so crazy. So you'll get messages like, we don't do it like that here. That's not the way we do performance appraisals. That's not the way we act here. That's not how leaders in our organization get promoted. And there's a voice in that culture that tells people they should act as people expect them to act. And that limits not only how leaders act, but the way they see the world.
Mr. Heil, more than a pleasure to have had you with us today. Some really awesome information on leadership. And of course, your book is something I'm sure our listeners want to tap into, that resource, Choose Love, Not Fear. How can listeners get more information on you and on the book, Choose Love, Not Fear?
You can reach me at GaryHeil.com or at the Washington Speakers Bureau, and the book's on Amazon. Eric, I really appreciate the time this morning.
And I appreciated the time as well. Thank you so much. Again, Gary, all the best, and thanks so much for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks, Eric. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. We've been speaking with Mr. Gary Heil, an internationally acclaimed expert in the fields of leadership, management, and organizational culture. Again, his book is called Choose Love, Not Fear, How the Best Leaders Build Cultures of Engagement and Innovation That Unleash Human Potential. And for further details, visit GaryHeil.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.